Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
Happy belated St. Patrick's Day, everyone. That's coming from an Irish girl from... I'm actually from a little tiny village called Erie, Ireland. It's in the county Donegal in the north part of Ireland, which kind of bummed me out because as a Catholic, I was like, wait a minute, I can't be from the north part of Ireland. But turns out I am, because one of my aunts did our heritage. And we actually have family reunions in Ireland now. And some of my coolest relatives I found in the homeland, the motherland. We also found out that I'm related to Ulysses Grant, fifth great uncle there, that guy. So I'm kind of proud of that as well. Anyways, top of the morning to you, top of the evening, top of the afternoon, whatever it is. You probably have a little bit of corned beef and cabbage left over from yesterday, a few potatoes as well. Have you ever noticed that you can never get the same proportion of corned beef, cabbage, and potatoes? So like you always end up with, I don't know, 8 potatoes left with no meat, or a half a pound of cabbage and no potatoes. I do mine all in the crock pot and it comes out great, but inevitably we have potatoes left over and I don't eat potatoes. I'm probably the only Irish person that doesn't eat potatoes, but I love it. The cabbage. Oh my gosh. I love the cabbage. It's so good. And I can never understand the whole thing about cabbage. People who like cabbage often don't like Brussels sprouts. I happen to like both of them. Both of them are some of my favorite. But my dad loves cabbage, hates Brussels sprouts. I'm like, how can you not like Brussels sprouts? All they are little cabbages. Anyways, there you have it. Now we can move on to the next holiday, which is Easter. Brings us to my favorite holiday of the year, because I love everything Easter. I like the jelly beans. I love the Reese eggs. I like the peeps. I love everything about Easter. I like what it stands for. I like getting dressed up in a spring dress. I love everything Easter. And as we move into the Easter season, I hope you will help, will enjoy celebrating it with me. Yeah, because I'm here every week, right? We join each other every week right here on Mom Talk Radio. And thankfully, we have a sponsor who brings us to you, and that would be Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama Vitamins is our sponsor. You can go to drinkpremama.com where you'll find all of their nutritional supplements, whether you are thinking about getting pregnant, you are pregnant, or you have just given birth. They have everything that you need, from fertility to lactation, and an entire product line of maternity wellness. You can find them at CVS, Target, Amazon, and other specialty stores. The best part about it is you will never again swallow a big horse pill. Thank you, Pre-Mama. Go to drinkpremama.com. And when we return, we're going to speak with Rachel Simmons, the author of Enough As She Is, How to Help Girls Move Beyond Impossible Standards of Success to Live Healthy, Happy, and Fulfilling Lives.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret. Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am always excited to have with me a guest who focuses on women and how to help young girls grow up to be healthy, happy, and fulfilling. And we have just that type of author with us, Rachel Simmons. She is the author of Enough As She Is, How to Help Girls Move Beyond Impossible Standards of Success to Live Healthy, Happy, and Fulfilling Lives. She has been in O Magazine, the New York Times, she's gotten a lot of media attention, and now she's here on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you spending some of your time. You have a daughter yourself, and I'm just wondering, was that the motivation for your books?
Oh, no. I've been working with girls for about 2 decades. I'm co-founder of the nonprofit Girls Leadership and have been writing books about girls since a couple decades now, and probably have been doing it more because of my own experience as a girl, though I am mom to a girl myself, just 5 years old.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit, like, how did you get involved? I mean, why did this become your focus and your passion?
Sure. Well, I work on a college campus, and most recently have been doing leadership development and trying to help girls and young women speak up and take more risks. And what I started to see was that girls were experiencing enormous anxiety and depression, especially the highest achieving ones. And they often felt that no matter how much they tried or how many achievements they accrued, they didn't feel enough. And so that's what inspired this most recent book, Enough As She Is, because so many of these girls look great on paper, but they're really struggling inside with self-criticism and overthinking.
And so you've been doing this for a long time, and it seems that recently there's been a shift and a change in, I guess, the empowerment of women overall. What have you seen that's changed, or has your point of view changed in the last two decades?
Well, definitely one way that my point of view has changed is that I think it's not really enough for us to say, hey, girls need to be more confident and girls need to just speak up and everything else will follow. I think we actually have to start paying attention to what's going on inside of girls. I think we often have believed that our primary task was to empower girls, but we see that so many of them are struggling with a sense that no matter how hard they try, they just don't feel like they're enough. There's no question that the Me Too movement has really changed the attention given to women and girls, especially around things like, do girls feel comfortable using their voices, and do girls feel like their voices matter? So that's been another really terrific change that we've seen.
So I think that I probably have at least one of those daughters that they go to Ivy League schools, they do really well, they excel, and inside they're just, they're stressed out. I mean, I talked to one of my daughters about it last night, you know, how she manages stress. And where do you think that comes from? Do you think it's because they have to work harder in elementary school and high school, and then by the time they get to college, they're just on a treadmill where they are just used to working that at that hard speed? And suddenly
That's a great question. Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, I think part of the pressure for girls comes from the expectation that many of them get young, that they're supposed to please other people and take care of other people and do everything right. And so when you take that and you couple it with all of the expectations that high-achieving girls now experience around, you know, you've got to be a good athlete and you've got to be a scholar at school and you've got to be involved in activities, and then you add to that social media, where we know girls really dominate the visual platforms like Instagram and Snapchat, that combination is going to kind of create a lot of expectation and not a lot of free time. Adolescent girls get the least sleep of any group of youth. And I think part of the reason is that they're navigating so many expectations and often believe they have to please other people all the time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But I also wonder if as parents, we don't lay some of that expectation on them. I mean, I have two boys and two girls, and I definitely parent my girls differently because I want them to be stronger. So how do you do that without, I guess, doing harm to your daughters as well?
Another great question. I guess I would say, you know, the most important thing as parents that we need to do for our girls is make sure that they know why they are enough as they are right now, so that even as we encourage them, that we're very clear that what matters most is who they are, apart from any grade they get or external standard of success. And then I also think as parents, we have to make sure that we are cultivating good character and a commitment to service and community alongside those values of achievement. Because research shows that kids who are raised with those values together tend to be happier and more successful.
So what do you think, you know, for these girls who in some ways were pushing toward a certain level, and I think, again, going back to the moms, particularly my generation, the older Xers and the younger boomers, we wanted better for our girls, right? So we kept pushing them to be better than we were. And maybe we, our generation didn't have a very good, like, image of ourselves. I think millennials and Gen Z are far more accepting of themselves than Xers and boomers. Where do you think the middle ground is if we don't know how to do those things ourselves?
Well, I think as parents, probably the most important thing we can do, you know, after what, some of the things we say to our own kids, is making sure that we work on our own challenges. So that if you, as a parent to a girl, really struggle with your own self-worth, it's important to take time to really understand why and expose yourself to strategies that might help you with that. If you struggle with body image and fat talk, like negatively talking about your body or how much you've exercised or not, it's important to take responsibility for that, because the truth is we're all scripting our children every day in how to handle life. And so I think we've got to kind of deal with our own baggage first as parents.
Right, exactly. So we only have 1 minute left. I was just wondering, what do you hope that women and readers will take from your book?
Well, I really hope that particularly girls will come to understand that you should not have to trade your self-worth or your wellness in exchange for success. That you should be able to pursue distinction and be ambitious and get out there and do what you want in terms of achieving your dreams, but that you shouldn't have to feel like every time you screw up that you're worthless. And so part of what this book is about is giving parents and girls the tools to pursue success while also taking care of themselves.
Well, thank you so much for sharing some of your day with us. I really appreciate it. And I want to encourage our listeners to go to Mom Talk Radio. We have a link to rachelsimmons.com. That's R-A-C-H-E-L Simmons. And pick up a copy of the book. It'd make a really great Mother's Day gift for someone or for an Easter basket. Thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us today. And we're going to reach into the archives and put the spotlight on one mom who joined us just recently. But I loved what she had to say, and I'd love to hear from her again.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Very excited to have with me a fellow Floridian, although we're both cold Floridians today, Amanda Johnson. She is from Tampa and has two children. She's got an Instagram following that's very, very active. Journeys with the Johnsons is where you find her on Instagram, and she's joining us here on Mom Talk Radio. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. So you do so many interesting things, and without feeling like I'm jumping around a lot, I want to touch on as many as possible, because I just I'm pretty amazed at some of the things that you do. And let's start with empowering stay-at-home moms. I like to call them the in-home moms. How do you do that, and why are you so passionate about that?
Well, when I moved, we moved here from Louisiana, and when we moved here, I quit my job, you know, after having my second child. I quit my job, and I felt, you know, when I moved here, I didn't really have a purpose, you know. I felt really lost. I felt like all I was doing was taking care of kids all day, and, you know, when we started going to Disney, we got passes, and we started going to Disney there, my kids started seeing all of these amazing outfits that they wanted, and they wanted me to recreate. And after I started learning how, I taught myself how to sew. And after I started doing that, I started feeling more of a purpose. You know, I want stay-at-home moms to find a purpose and not feel like all they have to do is sit at home and take care of kids all day. Find something for them. I say it's for them, but you know, it's partly for me too, because I have found something that makes me happy and makes me feel really fulfilled doing it for them.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about the unique and creative outfits that you've found in the favorite in the theme parks.
Well, when you go to Disney, you see a lot of Cinderellas, and you see a lot of, you know, Snow White, you see a lot of princesses. But we found that my kids wanted the outfits of a lot of the cast members. If you've ever seen the Trolley Girls, a lot of people just walk past them and they don't even think, you know, about them. But my kids really loved them and enjoyed them. So I said, well, if that's what they love and enjoy, let's, you know, do that. And my little girl, she loves guest relations, which is, you know, something very strange that most people don't think about. She loves going to guest relations and talking to them. So that's what we did. We have a guest relations vest. And, you know, it's just not the normal outfit that you think of when you think of Disney, but they love it. They love it so much. And if that's what they want, I usually try to make it happen for them.
So, that's very funny. So do you use a pattern for that, or do you just do it right off the top of your head?
I do not. I do not know how to use patterns, which a lot of people find very, very strange for somebody who sews as much as I do. I taught myself how to sew basically from YouTube videos and tutorials online. I've never had a formal class, so I basically learned by taking their old clothes, tracing them, and just trying to make it work, praying that it works a lot of times. It's a lot of trial and error.
Well, that's awesome. I never thought about tracing old clothes, but I also do not know how. I took sewing like when I was little, but I don't know how to use patterns either. I don't really know how I do it, but I used to make my kids jumpers. Like every holiday had a different jumper, and I guess I made my own pattern. So good for you. That's really cool. That's very cool. You know, sewing is one of the...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, sewing is one of those lost arts. And my kids grew up, I taught them how to sew. And my youngest has two different sewing machines. And everyone's always amazed that she knows how to sew. And anyhow, even my boys know how to thread a needle and sew. So good for you. Real quickly, because we only have a minute left, can you tell us where moms can find you on social media?
Right now, I'm only on Instagram, Journeys with the Johnsons, but I post everything that that I do on there. We have a lot of really fun, you know, creative outfits coming up that I think that I'm working really hard on this year. So 2018 should be a good year. A lot of very interesting and stuff that I hope everyone hasn't seen before. So we're really excited about that. And you can find us there. I'm on there every day.
Well, that is very, very cool. And we have a link to you on Mom Talk Radio. So thank you so much for sharing part of your day with us. When we return, we've got the author of Body Full of Stars, Female Rage, and My Passion into Motherhood.
Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
You know, you gotta love an author who writes a book with the word broccoli in the title. It's not only one of my favorite vegetables, right there with the Brussels sprouts and the cabbage that we talked about earlier, but it's got a lot of really great content in it as well. Just like broccoli, got a lot of good vitamins. This book has a lot of good stuff in it, and it is by Dr. Dina Rose. She's a sociologist, parent, educator, feeding expert, and the author of It's Not About the Broccoli, 3 Habits to Teach Your Kids for a Lifetime of Healthy Eating. She's been training parents and pediatricians, dietitians, and many others in the habits approach for the past decade, and she's been on a lot of TV and radio. And she's joining us here today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Dina, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks, Maria. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, thank you. So I think it's always interesting that when it comes to feeding our children, it's the one topic that all moms just dread. Like, either, you know, my child was born not liking foods, or I can never cook a variety because I just don't know how. I mean, it's just the one thing that every mom just dreads. And it's our war zone, as you call it in your book. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, there is so much pressure on parents to get their kids to eat a healthy diet, and I'm all for that. But it's much easier to know what you ought to serve your kids than it is to know how to get your kids to eat it. And you know, and the idea of parenting and nurturing, it all gets mixed up, and then it's public, and then we feel bad compared to our neighbors. So it is a hotbed of stress, pressure, negative feelings, you name it, and it's just in this mix.
Okay, we don't really have to worry about our kids not eating, because eventually, if they're hungry enough, they're going to eat. Is that myth or fact?
I don't know that anybody has ever really truly tested it, but what I do know is that there are some parents who can follow that and say, you know, if you're going to be hungry, you'll eat. But for the bulk of parents, we are so worried about our kids being hungry that we might follow that advice and say, well, here it is. This is what I'm serving. Eat it or don't, but, you know, it's up to you. That parents will cave. And you know what's worse than giving your kids the food they want right away? What's worse is doing this test where you say, no, you can't have what you want, and then your kid holds out longer than you do, and then you give your kid what she wants or what he wants. And ultimately, that just teaches your kids they just need to be stronger and tougher than you are. So there are so many more techniques that we can use to teach kids to eat a variety of foods that we don't have to do that, like, you know, starve it out technique.
So how do we get our kids to eat what we might think are the healthy stuff?
Well, what we need to remember are a couple of things. One is that kids don't like vegetables compared to the so-called friendly foods because we are loading those foods up with sugar, salt, and fat. So one thing we can do, of course, is make the vegetables taste better. The steam it so that they're pure movement is just not going to cut it with kids. The other thing is we have to eliminate some pressure, because when kids feel the pressure, they might eat a couple bites, but they're really just responding to the pressure and not really tasting the food. And finally, we have to teach them how to become confident explorers. I mean, it can be really scary to try unfamiliar foods. I mean, what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? For me, it was fried crickets, and boy, that was scary.
You know, unfortunately, I'm actually next week going to Cameroon, and okay. I'm sure that if you were asking me this question a month from now, I'm sure there's going to be something new on the list, because my daughter has already told me that I'm supposed to be adventurous when I go there and eat. So, right, fried crickets, that would be weird.
It is weird. And so there are specific skills that we can teach kids about exploring. First, we need to eliminate the whole pressure that they're going to have to eat the food that they're exploring, right? Because the pressure to eat makes some kids just shut down. So we can move it away from the eating domain, give them a pea-sized sample, and then engage their fact-finding mission. Make them sensory explorers. Ask them questions, not do you like it, but what color is it, or is it squishy, or what does it smell like? And even when you taste it, you know, is it sweet? Is it sour? Is it salty? Those kinds of questions help children build up a database of food facts that help them predict what something will taste like, and it makes them become more interested in exploring, more confident in exploring, and more willing to actually eventually eat the food that they have explored.
That's really great advice. And when you say it, I'm like, oh, wow, that makes so much sense. But then what happens is dinner time falls when moms are most tired. They're trying to do homework. They're trying to, you know, our kids are in the car, or we're rushing, you know, they have 10 minutes to eat. How do we find the right balance there.
Dinner, you're right. It's the big daddy of the day. So we have to take the pressure off dinner. One thing we can do is start improving the quality of the food at breakfast or at lunch or at snack time so that there's less pressure on dinner. And young kids are often really hungry at like 3:30, 4, 4:30, and we give them some salty, crispy kind of snack, but you can actually give them dinner quality food then. So that's one thing we can do. The other thing is what I call the rotation rule, where you take the foods that your kids already eat and start switching it up so that they learn the mindset of variety. Don't serve the same food 2 days in a row. And you do it with the food that they're used to so that you can separate out likes and dislikes from the behavioral issue. And then finally, I would say, just make sure that there's something on the dinner table that your kids normally would eat. It doesn't have to be the full meal. We have to move away from that. And that's one of the reasons to improve the other meals and snacks so that we don't worry so much about what they're eating at dinner. And so if they're just going to eat the potato one day or just going to eat the chicken another day, just let it be and know that overall what you're teaching them through the use of the rotation rule, through the use of the exploration technique, is ultimately going to teach them to be better eaters.
Right, right. So what about just real quickly, the examples that we demonstrate to our children? Can you talk about like how we can still eat the bad stuff and teach our kids to have good eating behaviors, or is that just we have to walk the talk?
Well, it always helps if you walk the talk. In other words, you know, if you eat the foods that you want your kids to eat, then A, they're going to see you eating them, but B, the research shows they're just more available, right? Because if the parents aren't eating the healthy food, they tend not to be in the house. But a lot of times what happens is one parent is a great eater and the other parent's not such a great eater. And then what do you do? And one of the things I want to say is that in those situations, we need to talk to our kids about why I wish I ate better, why I want you to eat better than I do, the struggle I have when I go places and I can't find things I like, or things like that to neutralize the parents' poor eating habits. And then we have to talk about what good eating habits are. It's not just eating your vegetables. It's eating healthier food more frequently than the other food. It's eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full and not because you're bored, sad, or lonely. So that's why it's not about the broccoli. It's not just about vegetables. It's about all the habits.
And unfortunately, I would love to go through all those habits with you, but we're out of time. So you can learn more about Dr. Rose's book at itsnotaboutnutrition.com. You'll find everything you need to know there. And thank you so much for being with us. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with Jennifer Schreiber. She's the author of From Mac and Cheese to Veggies.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
We've been talking a lot about food today on Mom Talk Radio, some good, some bad. And today, we're going to talk about From Mac and Cheese to Veggies, Please, How to Get Your Kids to Eat New Foods and Picky Eating Forever and Stay Sane in the Process. That's the part that I like, the sanity. And we're here with Jennifer Schreiber, who is a nutritional therapy practitioner, and she has a lot of credentials around this. And let's just jump right in. So welcome, Jennifer, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So I love the fact that you teach families how to make step-by-step changes to create a non-toxic lifestyle. What is a non-toxic lifestyle? What are we aspiring for?
There's three components of that I work on with people. One is a food component, so getting to natural foods, away from processed foods, making incremental changes around diet. The second piece of that is mindset and how we're talking to ourselves, how we're talking to our kids, building up our own resilience and joy in life. And then the third part is a non-toxic home. So deleting chemicals from our home that are in air fresheners, in the laundry detergents, replacing those things with alternative products that are safer and natural and aren't going to give our kids cancer in the future.
Is there a surefire way to figure out what's good and what's bad?
As far as the products that are in the home?
Yes. Yeah. And the things that our kids are eating.
Well, the things that, as far as food is concerned, the things that don't have labels are always going to be best for you. You know, we talk a lot about label reading, but if you're choosing natural foods that are, you know, it's a tomato, it's a piece of meat, it doesn't have to have ingredients lists on it, that's always your best, safest bets. But there are, you know, some standards that are out there, like an organic standard or getting something local at the farmer's market, that's always going to be a better choice for you. And when it comes to things in the home, I'm a big fan of looking up ingredients and looking up products on places like the Environmental Working Group's Skin Deep app, Think Dirty. There's a few of those around there that can really help you decode what is in any particular product and understand that at the consumer level, not having to have some biochemistry degree to choose what's right for your family.
So let's switch the gears to the picky eating. And why is picky eating more than just a nuisance for moms? Like, why should we really worry about it?
Often it isn't just a phase, and that's what we think with toddlers, that can be part of it, but it often continues on. And we know many people in their 30s and beyond who are still picky. And what that leads to is nutritional deficiencies, because we are self-limiting foods and we're not getting the whole spectrum of nutrients. And often we're picky for things that are not natural. We're picky and we're having processed foods and sugars and that type of stuff. The other thing is that it can be driven by physiological issues in the body that are things like altered gut flora, structural issues in the mouth, the brain connection to the digestive system. And those things don't magically change. Those are things that take healing and nutrition and work to overcome. So when your kid's picky and it's beyond that toddler phase, that can be a sign that this is a problem that's ongoing. It's not just going to go away.
So if we're not good eaters ourselves, is it possible to teach our children to be good eaters?
I am a big fan of changing ourselves first and doing the work first. And that's something that can put a lot of people off. But that's part of my philosophy, is to meet you where you're at and make those small changes and say, no shame, no judgment so far, but what is the next step that we can do that will work on ourselves so that we kind of open our own minds of how we want to change our kids? So for me, it's a whole family shift that happens. Mm-hmm. And we do need to often work on our own mindset around food, our own pickiness. I was picky definitely into my 20s and, you know, into my 30s in certain ways. And we have to open up ourselves and demonstrate that to our kids by trying new things, by getting them involved in cooking and taking the time to do that ourselves, and making it something that's engaging and not something that is forced upon. Because with anything with the kids, they're going to look more to what we're doing versus what we're saying.
Before we run out of time, get your website in here. It's bodywisdomnutrition.com. There you can find the book. You can also find a lot more of Jennifer's wisdom around eating. And I love the fact that you say that the best foods are the ones that come without a label, because that says it all, for at least in my book. Thank you so much for spending some of your day with us, Jennifer. And we have a link to bodywisdomnutrition.com on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to turn away from food and look into the infant stage and mental health of children in the United States.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
I'm delighted to have with us Daria Best. She is a leader, advocate, and social change agent in infant mental health and child welfare. She has multiple master's degrees and is coming to us with a lot of knowledge about mental health and children. And I'm excited and want to jump right in here. So, Daria, thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me.
let's talk about anxiety in children, because that's something that we don't really, you know, we always think, oh, children's life is so carefree. But can you talk a little bit about anxiety in children?
Yeah. So in young children, we wouldn't really think of them as being anxious, but there might be some common everyday behaviors that your child may exhibit that can be a sign of anxiety. So some things as your child might complain about stomach aches or not wanting to go to school or go to certain places that are routine, that can be a sign of anxiety for your child. Something may be happening at school, or they might be experiencing something that's making them feel nervous or anxious.
I think if we identify that something's up with our child, then sometimes we don't know as parents the best way to approach it. So if we haven't identified that anxiety, what is the best approach?
The best approach for kind of exploring whether your child might be feeling anxious or experiencing symptoms of anxiety would be exploring the behaviors that you notice about your child. So if you notice that your child used to enjoy going to school or going to certain places and now there's a hesitance to that, pointing out that behavior, like, wow, I realize that you don't seem as happy to go to this place, or you seem a little bit sad or upset. Tell me what's going on. So by parents exploring or naming the feeling for children, because that's where they often have difficulty in talking about what it is that they're experiencing, by parents being the one to label the behavior, that starts the conversation about what the child might be experiencing, and it also makes it okay that they have whatever feeling it is that they're having.
And what about this, the phenomena, and maybe it's not a phenomena, but perfectionism, where it seems like today we expect so much out of our children, and it starts at such a young age. We want them to be on technology, to know how to, you know, work an iPad, to have college credits by the time they, you know, are actually going to college. What do we need to be aware of there?
Yeah, with perfectionism, it becomes a slippery slope. So your child might feel that there's no room for error. And so by being perfectionistic at every single thing that they're doing, that then creates a sense of nervousness or unease that they can't make a mistake or they can't get things wrong. And so we have to have a balance about the expectations for our children, because they're so much going on in the world and so much that we want our children to accomplish, but we have to be mindful of what their abilities are and making it okay to not get things right all the time and to not be perfect all the time, because we're human, we're prone to errors, and making that okay is part of parents' responsibility or parents' way of managing this need or the desire to get things right.
Right. And finally, because we only have 2 minutes, one of the biggest challenges with younger children are tantrums. What should our approach be with tantrums?
Yeah, tantrums are a way of children communicating something about their internal state. So it might be that in school they've had to hold it together for so long in the day just to make it through the school day, and you might find that by the time you're picking your children up from school that they're practically unable to manage their feelings anymore. So you might see that in terms of behaviors like tantrums. So giving the child some space to have their meltdown, for lack of a better word, but also creating opportunities for them to relax. So maybe it's that you do a leisure activity once you pick them up from school before starting homework, or giving them some time to decompress from their days or whatever the activity is that's triggered the tantrum. Creating some space for the child to then calm down, regulate themselves, just have some sense of quiet and peace before moving on to the next activity would be a way to manage tantrums on time.
Well, really good advice, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today. We have a link to you and your website on Mom Talk Radio. I want to thank everyone for joining us today on Mom Talk. It's been another great show, and I hope that you'll go eat that corned beef and cabbage and get ready for the Reese eggs. I'm Maria Bailey. Talk to you next week.